Thank you so much to our new Patreon subscribers, Zach Kirkland and Katrina Michelle Martinez. You are the brittle chocolatey coating to our M&Ms.
Folks, the Patreon helps out so much. Thank you so much for subscribing.
Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, according to The Guardian and Nielsen book data, last year in the UK, 669 million physical books were sold, the highest overall level ever recorded. Research from Nielsen book data highlights that it is print books that Generation Z favors, accounting for 80% of purchases from November 2021 to 2022. Libraries are also reporting an uptick in Gen Z users who favor their quiet over noisy coffee shops. In the UK, in-person visits are up 71%. Wow, those are some pretty staggering numbers. I mean, I'm sure that those stats in the UK, like, probably kind of reflect other stats in other countries. I think people are just reading a lot more than they used to, especially print books, apparently.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think COVID kind of like, and I know it was rising a little bit pre-COVID, but I think COVID really was an accelerant to it and just like blew up. Because ever since then, I think like people were forced into reading. They're like, OK, well, I guess I'll just read. And then they were like, actually, this is like not a cool, not fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And got into it and maybe got involved in communities with it or whatever. And it's harder to say goodbye to than one might think. So I think that's really cool. I think that's really uplifting. Yeah, I remember when we started the podcast, I was like, man, are we starting like a newspaper in a digital world?
No, you know? We're good. No. We're golden. We're right in there.
We're golden. Yeah. So bring it on, readers. That's an awesome fact.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like with maybe the tablets, I mean, I really like my Kindle personally. And I know that you do too. I actually really like reading on my phone too. But I think the thing about a physical book, and we've talked on and on and on about it over and over, and I know that a lot of other people have talked about it too, but I think that there is that kind of element of more separation from electronics and, you know, the BB screen things that we're constantly like invested in optically, you know, and auditorially, I guess. Like, just if there's right. So much of our attention is spent on these screens. It's really awesome to be totally immersed and entertained with paper in your hands, and it's really, there's, you know, there's really nothing like it. So it makes sense that people are kind of like checking out with these things, you know. I can't speak to everybody's attention span. I can only speak to my own. Mine has definitely been zapped over the last like 4 or 5 years of being on my phone and on my computer way more often than I ever was. And so I feel like personally, like, reading on my phone almost like tricks my brain into thinking that I'm on my phone.
Oh, wow. So it like suffices, like itches you get your phone fixed still with like reading on it.
I've been reading on my phone a lot more often lately. It's
really?
it's not weird, because I know a lot of people do it. It's just I have like the continuous scroll setting on my Kindle app, and it just feels like I'm reading an article, kind of.
Totally.
And I don't know what it is. It's like, I think just physically my body's so used to that motion of just sliding my thumb up the screen that it just works really well.
Totally. Do you have it set to continuously scroll, so you have to touch it in order to scroll it, or is it always kind of going?
Yeah,
so on my computer,
yeah,
I can get it where it always goes, and I can just
hands-free
it, and I can just watch it, you know? I have to time it properly.
You can get these things for your Kindle that you can, like, get a stand or a clamp or something, you know, for your Kindle that'll hold it in place for you while you're in bed and, like, tilt it at the perfect angle for you, and then you can get, like, this remote that, like, attaches to the screen on your Kindle. So you can just lay in bed in as comfortable of a position as you want, and then like click the little remote and it'll turn the page
nice
for you. So you
how decadent.
So you really just literally don't have to move, and your eyes can just like scan the Kindle. So that might be my next step. I really like mass market paperbacks. I like trade paperbacks and stuff. I'm buying up those things. But the hardcovers, I feel like that's what I'm buying, that's like spending my money on, you know. If it's something that I really, really am excited to read, I'll always buy the hardcover over the paperback. But then I've got this big chunky hardcover that's like not even close to as comfortable to read as like me on my side, like curled up with my phone like 2 inches from my face, you know.
Dude, the Kindle has opened up whole new realms of reading for me. Like, I used to never ever read in like pitch black, because of course I need to be able to see the book in order to read. But now it's like I can lay in bed and have no lights on and just have like the faintest of light coming from my Kindle. It's so nice. When you have it on your phone, is it because the phone, like, it's a little like glary sometimes. It's like kind of hurts my eyes when I turn it on. Do you have a way to combat that? Do you have like a white, like a manila setting or something that makes the light yellowish?
So on the Kindle app, there's definitely some settings to help with that. Also on iPhones, I don't know if this works on Androids, but there's like some weird feature when you mess with the settings in like the Zoom settings, not the app, but like the mechanic, like the accessibility thing, where you can, typically it's just to Zoom, but there's like this weird hidden feature in the Zoom section of the accessibility settings where it'll make your screen even dimmer, like way dimmer, like almost to the point where you can barely see it. That works really, really well for when I'm reading in the dark. But it's still like, you know, I know it's like, you know, the iPhone's like, whoa, we're in after dark mode. It's totally no blue light at all, for sure. It's like, no, it, of course there is. You know what I mean? Like, you're
probably
still,
I don't know.
No, there is. Like, that's silly.
I just like the Kindle because it like kind of looks like a book. Like, it doesn't, totally. But you know, it's obviously has some light to it. But it's pretty good, man. It, like, I've read that thing for literally almost 8 hours in a row, and it didn't hurt my eyes at all.
No, I mean, I really like, I have a Kindle Oasis and I swear by it. I think it's awesome. The battery lasts a really long time. I mean, I think kind of going back to this article, I think that also the physical books thing, I mean, there is a certain kind of like aesthetic to it. I think that like as the general kind of like middle class of the world starts getting poorer, we start to buy like more kind of cheap things instead, like in a more volume of cheap things instead of big expensive things like cars and houses and children and stuff like that. So like we're kind of getting our kicks through like,
dude, I remember last time I bought a child.
All but frequent purchases. Yeah, yeah. You know what? I know, I slipped up when I said that. Book reviews kill. Selling children.
Selling children.
But what I do mean, though, is like there is that certain kind of like small yet frequent purchase kind of bump that you get from buying a book that,
totally,
you know, I feel like it's kind of akin to, and this is really going to like give away mine and Chad's age, but when we were working as teenagers and it's like, what do you spend your paycheck on? DVDs and CDs, you know,
totally.
Like that was
games,
what we spend our money on, and video games too, but now
but
all
the
that
CD
stuff.
The physical versions of them,
yeah, but we, you know, I'd go to Best Buy and I'd buy like two CDs and a couple DVDs and I was just this is the best, like I've got, like there's no possible other way for me to get this stuff,
right,
you know?
Right,
but now, I mean, obviously, but with books it's like there's still like that kind of physicality to that market that I feel like a lot of other media doesn't do, really. I mean, physical media with like Blu-rays and special editions and stuff is cool, but with books there's just a certain better, in my opinion, aesthetic to it. No.
I couldn't agree more, man. There's like, I will love the Kindle and I'll love you forever for giving me the Kindle and like introducing me to the Kindle world. And it has been so nice, like having one pocket able to carry 40 books and 5 audiobooks. That is an awesome, awesome thing. But that being said, I will never grow old of the aesthetic of having a book, the smell of it, like the feel of it between your fingers, and just like the like satisfaction, that little like dopamine hit that you get from closing it at the end when you're done. Yeah. You're just like, ooh, nice. And there's the back cover. Like there's just something so, I don't know, I mean, nostalgia to it, or like Instagram photo-y, whatever that essence is called, you know, but it captures it real nice.
Keep it up, everybody. Keep buying those books, like in whatever form, honestly. But yeah, keep the bookstores alive. It'd be a real shame if, you know, bookstores kind of went the way of a lot of record stores. But record stores are kind of coming back, too, in their own way. Yeah, I live in Portland, so record stores will never die here in Portland. But I have a feeling there's no like Barnes & Noble of record stores. No,
we have Ranch Records here in town. I'm not sure. I know they moved a few years back, but I'm not sure if they're still around or not. I think so.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I couldn't tell you.
I mean, I just think it's really cool that so many people are reading, man. It's really, not even just because like it affects our career and my career like so much. I just think it's awesome. Like, yeah, whenever I'm in Powell's or one of the other awesome bookstores here in town, I'm mostly seeing young people. Like I'm mostly seeing people under 30. Like I'm not saying that there's never people that are over 30, but I'm mostly seeing like people in their late teens, early 20s, and you know, they're not just like messing around or anything. Like they're not just there to loiter or anything, and they're looking at books, they're reading, you know. Some of them are sitting in the manga section, they're reading like 3 or 4 manga at a time, but you know what, you do you,
like, dude, more power to them. I wonder if that has something to do with like, you know, there's always like a counterculture, right, you know, that's like putting studs on their jackets or whatever. I wonder if this is kind of like that, since the whole world
maybe,
is going like digitized, you know, if they're like it's like a counter, like F the system sort of thing, if maybe. They're like, no man, I'm getting a book, you know,
maybe, yeah, do it, I encourage it, go off.
Dude, me too. Me too. Tell me about your week. How you been doing?
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like I did a bunch of stuff this week, and I also didn't get anything done. Listeners, I'm sure you can totally relate to that. I feel like that a lot, actually. I feel like I did so many things, and I just haven't really made that much progress on anything. But yeah, what did I do? So I finished a book called Ring Shout by P. Jelly Clark. That's the second P. Jelly Clark book I've read this month. And man, like if I thought, I mean, I read The Black God's Drums last year. I thought it was excellent. It was really, really good. It's not even close to as good as Ring Shout, because Ring Shout is probably going to be one of the best books I read all year. It's 181 pages, really short. You can read it in like a day or two. But man, it just, I was just completely immersed and engrossed, and I just couldn't turn those pages fast enough, man. So if you're curious about it's 180 pages. Didn't take me long to read it all. And if you're curious about what it's about, it takes place in Georgia in the early 1920s and follows a group of young black women who hunt Ku Klux Klan members who are actually monsters from a different dimension. And one of them has a magical sword. It is seriously one of the coolest fucking books I've ever read. Like, it's really? So awesome. Yeah, it's really intense. I would categorize it as like fantasy horror, and which is cool because you typically don't see much of that specific genre at all. Like as I was reading it, I was like, whoa, this is pretty horrific. Like, this is pretty messed up. Obviously it's about the Ku Klux Klan in the 20s, so yeah, it's gonna be really messed up, but not in like all the ways that you would think it is. But it is just like a really amazing book. The writing in it is incredible. I think P. Jelly Clark might be like an author. I'm just going to kind of go buy up every one of his books because he's got another book called A Master of Djinn, which has like two or three novellas attached to it. The end of Ring Shout kind of gave me the vibe that there might be another book in this world, which would be amazing. But yeah, introducing fantasy elements to a kind of like brutal part of American history, man, the grace with which P. Jelly Clark did it, and just the ability to hold my attention harder than like most things I've been reading, which is saying a lot, because I mean, I'm also reading Dead House Gates, I'm reading Malazan, and we're into the end of it now, and I couldn't be more into Malazan than I am right now, because it's just, it's so delightfully weird and so confusing, but also we're in there now, you know.
Oh, we're deep.
Yeah, Malazan's going great.
The only way around is through at this point.
Oh,
you
we
know?
Have to go through. We have to keep up our schedule too. Which I just want to shout out. I mean, Chad and I had a hard time getting the last episode out just because of our scheduling stuff. It was my fault.
Yeah.
It was my fault more than anybody. Yeah,
it was your fault, and then it became my fault.
I like sent Chad the right tracks that he had asked for, but I didn't send him the tracks that we needed.
Yeah, I got half of what I needed.
Yeah, so for anybody who's curious about the Malazan episodes that Chad and I have been doing, Chad and I are kind of tag teaming these episodes in a way that we haven't really on the editing front, which means that, you know, typically what we would do is we finish the episode and then one of us takes the whole thing and we just edit it, and then a day or two later the edits are done and we put it out. But the way that Chad and I have been doing it lately is, these episodes are so intense and the recaps have to be like 30 minutes long.
Because
you just can't
be.
Skip over stuff. Like, you really have to say everything that's going on.
I kind of been enjoying them.
I like it too, honestly. I mean, it's a lot of work, but that being said, I kind of now, like, instead of doing the entire episode, which would take me a really long time, even though mine and Chad's editing proficiency is through the roof at this point, because we've been doing this with ourselves
so
for so
speedy.
Long.
I can see an off for a mile away, dude. I'm a world tour sniper.
So long. So I've been sending Chad the recap. Chad's been recording the recap on his computer, editing the whole thing, and then I do the intro and the discussion part of it, and then I send the intro and discussion edited stems to Chad, who then puts all the music and EQ and everything on it. And that's worked pretty well, except on Thursday night, I edited it. I did everything. I did literally everything I was supposed to do, except send the tracks to Chad. And then he hit me up after I went to sleep, and he was like, where is this? I want to make this episode. But anyway, I did want to shout out the two of us, pat us both on the back a little bit, because we have really been keeping a very consistent schedule with Malazan.
We have been.
It's the way you have to read these books. You have to make them a huge priority. I am kind of bummed because there's just a lot of stuff I really want to read. And I just, man, Malazan is just taking a huge part of my attention span.
Yeah, because it's not just a series, right? It's
no.
It's a ton of story that's layered and complicated and multi... tiered and just like, man, so there's rewarding. A lot going on there. So it really takes a lot of bandwidth.
But we're also reading Throne of Glass at this same time, which I think was my brilliant idea.
It was really brilliant because that's not a lot of bandwidth.
Well, I mean, man, Throne of Glass is pretty cool. Like, I mean, okay, so yeah, nice.
It's a different type of bandwidth.
Nice little segue over to Throne of Glass. So I'm about halfway through the Assassin's Blade right now, which is a novella collection. I think it's cool still. I mean, like, I'm not stoked on the Assassin's Blade. I think this is my least favorite of them so far, only because I think we should have just read it first and just kind of Sarah J. Maas's reading order be damned, you know, like because I don't want to spoil anything, but I feel like we're getting a little bit of like, while we're getting more information on a certain character, I feel like we're also kind of like regressing character wise and story wise.
Yeah, a little bit.
I was like excited about where the story was going, and now we just kind of like halted it and we're back reading prequel novels for a character that I still don't love very. I don't really like Selena very much at all. Like, I mean, no. I do like her sometimes in some instances, but overall, she's like pretty annoying so far.
I need her to like overcome something, or like she needs to have a problem that she fixes. You know,
I think it's going
to
happen. That's what I was looking for. That's why I want to keep reading. I want to just like read Air of Fire. So it's fine. We're going to get through this. I still like it. I didn't like the first novella very much, but I have actually pretty much I've enjoyed like all of the rest of them a lot, actually. So we'll talk about that in the next Throne of Glass episode. But I'm really excited to move on to Air of Fire, because for any Throne of Glass fans that are listening right now, you probably know why. Things seem to be about to expand in a very big way that I'm excited to read about. But yeah, all that being said, I mean, we are reading a ton of stuff. So I didn't read any of The Will of the Many. I am still going to read it now that I'm done with Ring Shout and just kind of like, I've got like my three books I'm reading, so I want to read The Will of the Many because I know it's good. I'm sure it's good. It's just a dense, like pretty big book, and I'm only like 30 pages into it, but that'll be kind of more of a priority going into the week. But that is my reading. Okay, let's move on to some of the things that I watched.
Okay, let's do it.
It's been quite the week.
Really? Watch, you don't typically have stuff. A very big watch section.
Right, Effie's sitting right behind me while I'm about to talk about Twilight, so...
You gonna talk some trash?
No, yeah, actually. So I've only watched, I've read the first Twilight book, and I watched the first Twilight movie like 2 years ago. And so Effie and I watched New Moon, which is the second one, and we're about halfway through Eclipse. So we're about like halfway through our Twilight marathon. It's taken a little while.
How many of them are there? Four?
There's five.
Five. Okay, wow.
So there's two more after Eclipse. We're almost done with Eclipse. So my thoughts so far watching the Twilight movies. Okay. how do I put this? I'm surprised and a little disappointed in just how much screen time is being devoted to Bella and Edward. And I know that that's like who the story is about, but it's just right. Like, damn.
I've never read or watched either. So all I know is like, that's like what the story is about, right? It's like their love story.
No, it is.
Right?
It is. But I mean, it's interesting because the way that Effie was explaining it to me, because Effie's read the books, and there were so many parts of the movies where I was like, why is that happening? Like, because I wanted to know more about the lore, and I wanted to know more about the Volturi and like everything. There's like this whole expanded lore to Twilight that Effie explained to me, like, isn't super well established and like explained in the books. And I think that kind of happened with the Harry Potter movies too, where it's like they kind of just glanced over a bunch of like deeper lore stuff to kind of like get, you know, the movies to be movies, you know, and they couldn't make them 5 hour long movies, except
they trimmed a lot of lore fat off it.
Sure, but like, I, you know, somebody watching Harry Potter, those movies for the first time without ever reading the books would be like, why the hell is that? Like,
there's a lot of really, holes in the world. Yeah,
so there's a lot of holes in the books. There's even more holes in the movies. You know?
Totally,
so with
totally.
Twilight, there were, I think Effie's such a good sport, you know, because we were watching it and I kept pausing it because I'm an ass, you know, and I was just like, why is this like this, you know?
But
and
what about
was,
this?
Yeah, and Effie was either like, this doesn't get explained, don't worry about it, or just watch the movie, stop pausing it, please. So I just, like, let's just watch the movie. So I just want to shout out Effie for her enduring patience with me while we were watching it, because I must be kind of a chore to watch these movies with.
Aren't the vampire lore kind of weird? Like, they don't die in the sun or anything? They just, like,
they
shimmer?
Glitter. Yeah, they glitter.
Yeah, that seems glisten. A little... like, what?
I kind of get it in a way. I think that what Stephanie Meyer was kind of going for with the vampires is that like... obviously she's subverting some stuff, but also like just this idea that they're like these kind of perfect, like timeless beings, you know what I mean? That are, I kind of get where what she was doing with it. I still think it's a little bit silly, but whatever.
So it kind of gives them an angelic twist as opposed to like a dark, ashy sort of thing.
I don't know, man. I, and for anybody wondering, I think I'm on Team Jacob personally. this Edward Bella thing, like, you know, this seems kind of abusive, you know? It's just like,
really,
I don't know, man. Like, he's just like,
does she get turned into a vampire?
That seems to be where things are going. Yeah, like,
okay, I mean, well, so you're on the second really one, and she has not yet.
No, not yet. I'm on the third one. Okay, okay. I'm on the third one. Eclipse. But yeah, I'm gonna keep watching them. I mean, I am. I'm kind of invested. I just want to see what happens, for sure. Especially with, like, the stuff going on with the Volturi, and like the Cullen family seems to be really important to everything that's going on here, and I want to find out more about them. I remember the first book, like, kind of. I like enjoyed it more than I thought I would until I got to like the baseball scene. And if people are listening right now and you know what the baseball scene is, I was kind of like, what the hell is going on right now? And then like in the second movie, when Bella is just kind of like thrill seeking, I was like, is this really like what the book is about? And Effie was like, yep, this is what the whole thing is. And yeah, I was just, I was kind of confused for some of it. But then also to of the movie's credit as a whole, I want to say a couple things though. First of all, those movies are not made for me. I'm a guy in my early 30s. It's not who those movies are made for. So, like, yeah, I mean, I can poke fun at it, but, like, you know, it's not for me.
Right, right. Like, obviously, you're going to have some critiques. Yeah, right.
But, like, also, the music in these movies is really, really, really good. Like, some of the music, yeah, like, some of the scenes where there's, like, you know, an obvious, like, you know, featured song, like, Muse or, like, Radiohead or whatever. Some of those scenes are really cool. The special effects are really awesome. The way that these people transform into wolves and stuff is really, really cool. The cinematography is good. There's cool movies to watch. I don't know. There's like a, I can understand why people would see these as like a sort of comfort movie, you know, like I would with like Lord of the Rings or maybe one of the Harry Potter movies or something. There is a certain kind of like coziness to it.
Okay. I can get that.
Yeah, but we'll see.
It's filmed up in like Washington, right? Where it's like all like rainy and kind of dark and foresty.
That's another thing, is it was filmed like kind of close to where I live with the same weather that I endure 9 months
endure.
Out of the year. I mean, it really, if anybody's curious about what Portland is like, go watch the Twilight movies, and it looks like that all the time here. And like,
it's rainy a lot,
which is actually kind of cool because I kind of appreciate and respect Stephanie Meyer's foresight in setting these books in the Pacific Northwest, because it's a perfect place for vampires to live.
It really is, yeah.
Because you never see the sun.
That's so antithesis to like where I live, right? We have like 300 days of sunshine, but that's like not like Oregon. If you think like Oregon and you think rain, don't change the way that you're thinking. That's mostly correct, because more of the state is super rainy than not. When I lived in Eugene, it was like, I remember there was one year we didn't see the sun for 3 months. It was like from January to March or something. And I remember every year they were like, and it's a new record, because you kept like counting days after days after days. We just like never saw the sun. It's rainy.
I remember last year, we had a particularly like brutal, really rainy, really gloomy winter last year. And I mean, it's been like that this year too, actually. It's been pretty overcast and pretty rainy.
Did you get any snow these last few days?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been, nice, oh, not these last few days, but it happened this year. But anyway, it was funny because we had like all of a sudden in like March or April of last year, our first like 65 degree, sunny, windless, cloudless day. And my mood was like elevated tenfold. I was like, oh my god, this is like what people feel like now and then. And it's funny because it's just like a good example of how people change over the years, you know. I mean, like, because I used to really love overcast weather. I mean, I couldn't get enough of it. And I think that like as like maybe my brain chemistry or has changed, or just my general kind of outlook on things, it's like, yeah, I'm kind of ready for sunlight after 3 weeks to a month of literally not stop. It's nonstop clouds and rain, you know? I mean,
and the world's just so like soppy.
Yeah, it looks like a Twilight movie, except without the sexy vampires. You know, so.
Well, you know, I don't know if you walked by a mirror lately, but it's got sexy vampires, I'm going to tell you.
I will keep everybody updated. I'll tell you all next week how I liked the ending without hopefully spoiling anything, but I think most people know what the ending is if they want to. Like, nobody's like, oh man, I need to get around to watching Twilight. I'm probably like the last.
What prompted the let's watch all the Twilight movies? Is it a thing that like Effie likes to do once every other year or something? Or
I don't know, like, yeah, I mean, because Effie like had read the books when she was younger, and I think that she liked the books more than the movies, it seemed. At least because of like, at least with the books, there seemed to be kind of more of a continuity regarding like the lore and stuff. And
I mean,
like,
it's
doesn't seem to be as... Wait, do you like the movies more than the books?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
Effie just interrupted me.
She likes, likes the movies, movies more.
She
huh?
seemed to like the books more, the way that she was explaining it. But yeah, so
it's about the vibes,
apparently. And there are vibes.
Lots of vibes. Okay, I would think that it would be movies or books because there's more time for vibes, you know, in the books. But man, that's okay.
But anyway, so yeah, if you hadn't seen the movies in a while and it was like getting up to be Valentine's Day and she'd been kind of having like a rough week at work at school and everything. So I was like, you know what? Let's order some food.
Some nom nom vibes.
Yeah, like let's watch some Twilight. And, you know, I had already watched the first movie, so we were all in. But by the time I got to the second one, I think I was pausing it a little too often for clarification. Also, the guy that plays Charlie, Bella's dad, I'm team Charlie, that guy. Because, like, damn. If he doesn't agree with me, that guy is gorgeous. Like, really, really.
You think so?
You should look up a picture right now of Charlie.
What will I search?
Charlie Twilight. Look at Charlie Twilight. And tell me that's not the most attractive person in that whole movie.
The one with like the 40s beard or the mustache, like the little like.
Yeah.
I don't know how Team Effie on this. He seems a little like investment bankery, like a 90s like investment banker.
Are we looking at the same
kinda?
Picture? Yeah, Effie didn't agree with me either.
Hmm. I mean, I could see maybe without the mustache. It's really the mustache is throwing me off. It's just it's taken up a lot of his face, and it's not like a little decal. It. You know, it's like a large. It's a statement stash he's got going on there.
You're all silly. I know what I talk about.
He's very serious.
I know what I'm talking about. Anyway.
He's got a serious face.
Speaking of really cool actors, I finally started watching The Last of Us, the show.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, man.
I never finished. I kind of got like three episodes deep and just stopped.
You should pick it back up so we can talk about it next week.
I should, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Like, it's so good.
I don't even like the game very much, but I think it's because I've complained about this multiple times. It should be a show, and they made it into a show, and oh my God.
Yeah, the game I found a little trying also.
I am going to talk about it more next week because I've only seen the first episode. It's an hour and a half long. I'm so confident I'll like the rest of it. I think I just started it, but wow. Like, what an amazing show. Like,
yeah, dude.
It looks so good. And, like, the Pedro Pascal is just incredible. Like, the whole opening scene. I mean, for people who have watched the show but maybe haven't played the game starts, like, in Joel and his daughter's house in the early 2000s. But it's really cool how in the beginning of the show, they kind of go from Joel's... I can't remember her name. Sarah. It goes from Joel's daughter, Sarah's point of view for the whole first part of that first episode. And it's really cool because in the game it's not really like that as much. I mean, it's just
all Joel.
Is it? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know.
Whatever it is, it's very short. It's just like the house and then everything kind of goes to hell. But in the show it's like a little bit more build up, you know. There's like these creepy little parts where like she's in school and there's like coughing and like weird like helicopters flying over, and it's like you can't
totally.
It's kind of like very reminiscent of like that first couple weeks of COVID where it was just like, oh, is this about to be like
right
like this is getting really
is
bad
about to be world
like,
altering here or we all together, yeah. Like
yeah. We have an event on our hands here. Thankfully it didn't get to mushroom zombie proportions, you know. Like that's really
straight
cool
up, dude. Wow.
But I mean it could, like, apparently from the banger very beginning of the first episode of The Last of Us where they were, it was in like the 60s, you know, and they're interviewing these guys and he's just like, oh yeah, if it was fungi, like there's no way we would all die. Like it would be horrible. It'd be the worst possible thing. And I haven't done a ton of research into that, but mushrooms are weird. Fungi is
mushrooms
weird.
Are alien, dude. Like, if you want to see some of the weirdest creatures that are not creatures, but plants, you know, flora. There we go. That's what I was looking for. You want to see some of the weirdest flora ever? Like, look at weird looking mushrooms. Some of them are like, look like they're bleeding. Some of them look like organs. Like, they're wild looking.
You can go down quite the mushroom rabbit trail.
Yeah.
That's without eating any of them. So,
dude, and like the science behind them are so interesting. Like, apparently, the mycelial network goes like 200 feet beneath every like forest floor.
So,
and they like communicate with each other, cool. And like the trees use them to like communicate.
It's like Avatar stuff. It's
like way crazy because like a mama tree like wants to raise her little treelings around her, but not so close that they're going to be fighting for the same resources. And so apparently she'll use the like mycelial network to like figure out the most optimal spot for her seedlings to go, and then they'll do like nutrient sharing and stuff through the mycelial network. If one tree has better access to certain nutrients, it'll share them. It's like crazy stuff, like straight Avatar stuff.
Speaking of I know I was just talking about The Last of Us, I kind of want to like real quick, go back over to Twilight because I wanted to share a theory that Effie had about Twilight and the movies, I should say. And I thought it was really interesting because if you watch the movies, there's like this weird kind of tonal dissonance between like what's going on and like how serious the actors are being. It's hard to explain. Like, you really need to watch the movie. It's like they're delivering these lines in like such an overly intense way for like what you're aware the storyline is, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of over dramatizing.
Like, Effie's theory was that like it was shot like with the actors were aware kind of it being like a horror movie, and then it was edited into like a teen romance movie. So that's why the tone feels kind of like weird.
It's all dark and heavy.
I really don't know if that's true at all, but I thought it was a really interesting theory. Like, while we were watching it, then we kind of like kept checking it out, like in that sense, you know, because like some of the delivery of some of these lines, it's just like like the specific like situation just doesn't seem to really call for it.
The weight that it's delivered with.
You just gotta watch it, man. They're fascinating movies. Like, I'm definitely not like, we need to turn this off, this is stupid. Like, no, not at all. I want to finish them out and see what happens. I've heard that there are some really weird things about to happen in these movies. So I'm on board for it.
Yeah, dude, I have not Twilighted at all, though I own all of them. I saw them all at Goodwill, like, I don't know, earlier this year, maybe it was a year plus ago. And I bought them all for like $6 for like the entire, I just haven't read them yet.
I blasted through that first one. I read it in like 3 days.
My friend who I loaned ACOTAR to, she equated the two. She was like, I've never been more excited about a book series when she was reading ACOTAR. She was like, I've never been more excited about a book series than it was when I read ACOTAR. And then also with Twilight. She was like, that was a similar level of excitement, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, there are cool relationships between characters, and also just, I don't know. It's just the, like Effie said, it's the vibes, you know,
it's the vibes. Yeah.
Don't try to pick it apart or else it might fall apart. And it's not there to be picked apart. It's there to be observed and witnessed. And obviously there was the, it's kind of like when all the Harry Potter movies were coming out or when the Star Wars movies are coming out. I bet it was like its own kind of event in its
own
way.
Totally.
So I respect the hell out of that. So moving on kind of from that, like I said, my week's been just like all over the place. I've also been doing a ton of writing, a ton of editing and stuff.
Nice.
Keep everybody updated on all that stuff as we move forward when I can. Also, I restarted Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, the FromSoft game.
Oh, nice.
That I haven't beat yet. That's because it's too difficult. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but I mean, it is just such a beautiful game. I wanted to give it another shot. It's really, really difficult.
I mean, it's FromSoft, so.
With the Dark Souls games and stuff. And I promise for people that aren't into this, I won't spend too much time on it. But just to make this very simple, with the Dark Souls games and Bloodborne and Elden Ring and stuff, there's like a mechanic in the game where basically you can just kind of farm souls and just level up. If you're having trouble with something, you can kind of just go fight weaker stuff for a while until you get beefy and so overpowered that the boss isn't really that difficult. And you can kind of just steamroll through stuff. That's not quite the way that I play the game, but if you are having a lot of trouble with something, you can kind of just make yourself stronger with a little bit of time investment and then just kind of like cheese your way through the boss and get to the next spot, which is nice. It's really cool in those games. Is it the most respectable way to play? Like, probably not. You know what I mean? But like, you can do it. But with Sekiro, they kind of took that function out. So you just kind of have to do it correctly. Like, you just have to do it right with the combat, I should say. And it's all about like breaking people's posture and like blocking enough hits so that you can get somebody's posture down to the... So
like a timing thing?
Yeah. It's like down to like the atom, like the timing sometimes, you know, and you have
to
like
one
really...
of those games where you can't hold block down, you just have to tap it at the right time. So it blocks for a half second.
You can hold block down, but it'll your posture meter will build up until it breaks.
So that's kind of a cool element to the game, though, because I was like, wonder when you're like, people are just wailing on you and you're I'm blocking. That's nice.
It's very cool. It's a gorgeous game. I mean, I've played Elden Ring and I really like Elden Ring, but I still think Sekiro looks better than Elden Ring. It's a really, really cool game. But yeah, I mean, I thought I could maybe like throw an audiobook on and like, I can't do that with Dark Souls and Elden Ring and Bloodborne and stuff. Like, I can just kind of going back to what I was saying before. And if you like listening to audiobooks, dear listener, try it with a grindy video game, you know, where you kind of just go do something kind of easy and repetitive and you can get into a pretty good state of flux. That being said, you can't do it with Sekiro. Like, you really have to like sit there and like
gotta be too focused.
You really have to focus on it, which is what I like about those games. But yeah, I'll report back if I. It's that one game. I've beaten all the other ones, man. I've beaten every single FromSoft game except well, not every FromSoft game. I've beaten every Souls game except for Sekiro. It's my white whale. Like, it's just it's the one that I'm trying, man. Like, I just
you'll
it's
get
so
there,
hard.
Man. We have faith in you. We Thank have you. So much faith in you.
But that is it for me. Yeah, I had just very all over the place this week, but a pretty cool week.
I'm glad that you were all over the place, because I feel like my week was fairly boring compared to that's yours, cool. With just a lot of redundancy. So that's perfect. So Dead House Gates, reading that, and I'm stoked that we're going to, because we got the fourth, we're going to finish the book up this week.
Oh yeah, we are.
Which
Memories
is going to be
ice.
Awesome.
Memories of Ice.
Yeah,
week. Wow.
Man, I was a little disappointed that Chain of Dogs wasn't, like, in my brain, I really had this, like, running and chasing and fighting and, like, that whole thing in there as what Chain of Dogs was for that section of the book, and it really wasn't. It was
just
like
really weird.
It was just really weird. Yeah, there was like a lot of weirdness to that section of the book. There definitely was some Chain of Dogs goodness and some fighting and some awesome sapper strategy that I just love so much. But yeah, it was got really weird a few times for sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's
probably
cool.
Gonna happen again.
Yep. The Assassin's Blade, I won't go too far into this, as you guys can listen to our episode on it, but I agree with you completely. Least favorite so far. The first one, I was not very pleased after like the first little novella. I was like, oh, okay, like, come on. Like, this is what we're gonna get this entire book. But then I started reading more and I was like, okay, it's not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I think, we should have just started with it. Whatever.
Whatever. We're here now. We're going to go through. Love the pace that we've been doing on those ones also. Another book series I think that bodes well, which is kind of like smashing your way through real fast, which I think is really cool. And then the only other thing, so I've just been, I guess there's two more things that I've been reading. I finally finished, because I kind of forgot about it, honestly. I was like holding on to He Who Fights with Monsters for a while. Just like, I didn't want to finish it, but I finally finished it this week.
How did it feel?
It feels good. I was kind of sad because I forgot about it. And then I was like, oh, I want to read He Who Fights with Monsters. And then I got really hyped. And then I only had like 20 pages left.
Oh my
and
gosh.
So I got like really super hyped for like 20 pages of book. And then just like, oh man. So it left me kind of wanting, you know.
Is that the end too? Like, is it over?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Like, I would be shocked if there was more.
Wow.
Like, maybe more in the world, perhaps. Yeah. But because there's definitely a lot of other characters that he could decide to like pick up the baton with, but yeah, I think I'm pretty satisfied with where it ended. I thought it ended pretty great. Love He Who Fights with Monsters. The era is over, unfortunately, but man, what a fun series. Like, definitely my favorite series that I've read since I read the Books of Babel.
Wow, that's saying a lot. You read some cool stuff between now and then.
We've read some really cool stuff. So yeah, I just couldn't recommend them enough, though they were beefy. There's a lot of them, and like that last one is huge. Like, it's a ginormous book, so you know, it's certainly an undertaking. And then I had some book mail yesterday that I didn't know was book mail, because it was said Chad Klein on the box, since normally it says Chadwick, but old Evan here sent me some book mail, and I started one of the books in there. So he sent me Between Two Fires by Christopher Buhlmann and The Combat Codes, which is Alexander Darwin. And after talking to him last night, he told me to start The Combat Codes, and I'm so glad he did, because it's so cool.
I knew
it's
you would
so
love
cool.
it. I knew it was a Chad
it's
book.
Like, fighting. It's like, I gotta be good at fighting in order to get into fight school. Like, it's like fucking,
it's exactly what you want to read.
Yeah, dude. Oh man.
I'm so excited for you.
I couldn't be more stoked. And it's the first of a series, right?
Yeah, there's I think Crier's War, I think, is the second book, or something like a Griever's War. I can't remember the name of the second book. But then the third one's coming out soon too.
Griever's Blood.
Griever's
and then
Blood.
Blacklight Born. Blood.
People seem really excited about it. I think it's got like a blurb from Fonda Lee on it, which I think was what made me want to check it out, but I don't know if I'll have time to get to it.
Did you know you sent me a signed one?
What? Oh, really?
Yeah, Combat Codes is signed by Alexander Darwin.
Because I have a copy too, because he sent me one, and then the publisher sent me another one. So I must have sent you the signed one. So that's cool.
We can trade next time I see you, because I don't need to take your signed one. But I was like, oh, wow, he sent me a signed copy of a book.
I'm so glad you like it. That's awesome.
Dude, I'm pretty stoked. Thank you for sending them my way. And I'm excited for a little more Christopher Buhlmann in my life as well, because I really love The Black Tongue Thief. And Evan was like, well, you know, you're going to get like halfway through it and you're just going to be like, oh man, this is sad. And he's like, with us reading Malazan right now, you probably should just like not read it at the same time. So I was like, okay, fair enough.
I wouldn't read Between Two Fires and Malazan at the same time. But that means you're going to have to wait till like October to read. But maybe that'd be a good time to read
I'll
it, actually.
I'll probably read it. Before then.
Just
I just feel like, you know.
Just know that I warned you, so.
Yeah, totally. I do really want to read it though, because like Buhlmann is awesome. Like, what a great storyteller.
He's really good.
As far as watching anything, I watched and finished. So there's like the Yellowstone prequel, 1883, that they did. And then they did like another one. It's like a short mini series, like one season. And that ended. And boy, I just cried like a babe.
Aww.
Man, it was so like heavy and just hit, you know, it hit very, very hard. And then they've got 1923, which is like the next generation of the family. I guess they're just going back in time and like giving you the history of the Duttons and how they made it to this big ranch in Montana. You know, they're up by like Bozeman, Montana, and own like a mountain up there. And they just have this huge plot of land. And so they're constantly defending their like farming lands against the other farmers in the area and just kind of having that old West type swagger to the show. And man, it's a dad show for sure. Like every dad in the world, like this show was made for dads.
I think my dad called me and told me I needed to watch it
for sure, because it's just great. And then 1883 is super awesome, little one season blurb into the family's history, and that's about the Oregon Trail. And then 1923, they have the ranch, and I'm only like 3 or 4 episodes in, but it's just as good. Oh, and Harrison Ford is in it.
What?
Yeah, really? Super cool. Yeah, he's super cool. He's like the main guy. Well, not the main guy, but the dad of the family. There's always like a dad of the family, and he's this generation's father.
You know, it's funny, growing up in Oregon, and I know that you probably dealt with this too, but we spent probably more time on the Oregon Trail in school than maybe other states' school systems would, because it's like our claim to fame, like Lewis and Clark and all of that stuff. And I remember just being, even when I was a kid, I was like, this is really, really horrific, like what we're reading about right now. Like, just every time it was time in class to talk about it, it was like, okay, this is how many people died when they got here. You know, this is how many people died when they got here.
The game, you know, it's like a rattlesnake bite or a dysentery.
Yeah, like just them explaining to us like how horrible of a time it would have been to actually, because I mean, yeah, like it makes sense. It's yeah, there's a lot of disease and just general the elements, you know, like we're not
to mention native individuals trying to protect their land and like kill you, you know. Yeah, so there's a lot of that happening as well.
They're running right through it, you know.
And, yeah, right through it, right through the middle,
and claiming it's theirs.
yeah, you know, so a lot of danger on that path. Sometimes I'll just like climb a butte or a mountain sometime here in Oregon, because like the Oregon Trail ends like over in like the Willamette Valley. I just look around sometimes and I think like, okay, we just crossed that. That was really rough terrain that I just made it over. Imagine trying to get a wagon through that.
And horses.
Like a wagon and train children. Even with like children.
Nope. And like, and some of them are sick. You know?
Yeah, some of them are sick. Yeah. Like, I don't even know, like a river, like even a little one, like the Deschutes. Like, I don't know how you're getting across that. Like, I have no idea.
With difficulty. With
I mean, in 1883, they were like one of the things that we most fear on the, Oregon Trail was the rivers that they come across, because it was just like someone always dies. And like, it's amazing how many people in the past couldn't swim.
Yeah, it's like, what? It's interesting. I've been able to swim since I was like 4 or like, I don't know, my parents just like had me figure it out.
Yeah, me too.
Early. So it's like in my mind, like I can't imagine like what it's like to not be able to. Like,
totally,
I can imagine
totally.
It's really scary. I can imagine it sucks.
Super scary. And I think people who don't know how to swim have this idea that their body is denser than the water, to the point that they'll just like fall to the bottom of the water that they're in, that there will be no buoyancy whatsoever, which you kind of have, you know?
No, you do have some, depending on your body for sure. But like also, like eventually it kind of will.
Like, right. Like, yeah. You will fall to the bottom eventually. Do you know that your cousin Cassidy can't swim?
Yeah, I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember trying to get him to come float the river with me one time, and he was like, nah, man, I actually like can't swim. And I was like, bro, I will like teach you how. I was like, we need to repair.
I think
change
at a certain
that right
point,
now, dude. Yeah. We need to change that right now. And he was not down.
I think it's just too scary. Like, too scary.
Yeah. And that's where I kind of learned this drop to the bottom idea, because he had this idea where if he were to fall out of the raft, he would just plummet to the bottom of the river. And I was like, no, bro, you're going to float for a second. He's like, not me, dude. I'm going to drop like a rock.
Not long enough. Like, yeah, no, but that's the thing, is it's like, yeah, you will float for a little while, but like,
right.
Like, I think that when you've been, you know, because I've been swimming, he wouldn't just be like, oh, let me figure out how to do this really quick.
Right.
Like, he would just probably sink totally panic and not knowing what to do. What were we talking about?
1883, the Yellowstone show, and dads love it.
How much of an investment is that show? Should I
So Yellowstone is like four or five seasons. I don't more than three at least. But 1883, it's like a mini series. It's just one series, and then that's done. So it's probably like nine episodes, and each one's like 50 minutes long or something.
I was just talking to Effie about this. I need to get a new comfort show. I don't think it'll be Yellowstone.
I don't think this is the comfort show for you.
I was thinking about it though. I was like, because I had seen a clip randomly of The West Wing. And I was like, "Oh, is that going to be
your comfort show?"
No, I don't think it's going to. Like, I entertained the idea of it for a second.
Talking about dad shows, wow.
I know, and I also just like, I don't know. I'm already kind of like pretty sick of politics, and but maybe politics today has distanced itself so much from the politics of the late '90s that
maybe it would
be like
its
own kind of like fantasy thing. That's Effie's favorite show is X-Files.
Really? Actually. Hell yeah, dude! You should watch the X-Files or something similar. You know,
I've seen a few episodes of it.
Yeah, I haven't watched very much of it, but so. Did you continue watching Andor? Because I watched all of it this week as well, which is my final thing.
No, I didn't. And it's annoying because I'm so bad at TV shows. I don't hate it, but I think I just need to push through. You told me to push through. A couple people in the Discord.
You need
told
to
me.
Get to episode four. Or so.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
which is weird.
I don't think it's bad at all. I mean, I don't have any issue with it. It's just not really grabbing me.
No, because you're not with a hero. You're with like some random That's guy fine. Who seems to have like no skills, who's like working in like the rust heap. And you're like, okay.
It's
like,
just kind of slow. It's just kind of a slow show, but I think it's supposed to be. So I'm not saying I'm not going to watch it or anything.
It gets way more exciting.
I want to finish The Last of Us. I'm kind of like committed to this now.
Dude,
you know,
I'm glad that you started it and talked about it here because I only watched like three episodes and then totally forgot about
Why?
It.
Why? You're like really, you're really consistent with your TV watching.
I know. I think it was, I know what it was. It was because this one I had to watch it week by week by week. And so like, I'm really consistent with the show when I can just power my way through it all.
Yeah, totally.
And just like sit down for a night and watch an entire show. But like when I have to like remind myself every week for 8 weeks to do it, then I just am bad at that. And so I'm kind of stoked though that I didn't because we can watch it together.
When did The Last of Us come out?
Oh, I don't know. It was last like 8 year? Months ago. Yeah.
It was 2023, first air date, January 15th, 2023. So around that time, you and me were reading The Expanse, maybe?
Was it January?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was Expanse, Inheritance, uh-huh. Inheritance, Christopher Paolini.
Oh, right.
We started The Expanse like a year ago this month.
Dude, I love The Expanse. I was thinking about that the other day, dude. I really want to reread it. There's some like money series that we hit upon that I've really want to reread. Primary amongst them, Books of Babel. I'm not quite ready for another Expanse read, but I do know that I will want to.
Yeah, I'll definitely
it will
do
happen.
It
yeah,
at some point.
But yeah, that's it for me. And then the final thing that I got is just some actual book mail not sent to me by Evan that I want to open real fast.
Let's see it.
I think it might be okay. So this is Evan Winter's The Rage of Dragons. I'm pretty sure that this was sent to me by Kevin because he told me so in our Discord. So, Kevin, thank you so much for sending me this book. I am really, really stoked to read it.
Yeah, I guess that first one and the second one are really, really amazing. And everybody's been waiting for the third one. I think that series is called The Burning. Something happened where I think Evan Winter said that it was supposed to be a trilogy and then he's turning it into a quartet. So I think he had to rework some stuff and it got pushed back or something. But I've been kind of putting off reading those because I wanted to read the entire thing. But I've heard that first book especially is like legend status. Like it's really, really, really good.
I mean, just the cover is super, super cool. It's got this like Roman kind of like motif on it with like a bunch of this dragon spreading its wings on a shield with a bunch of blades sticking out that look all used and well-worn and... Kevin, I'm quite certain that it was you. Thank you so much for the book. Book mail, just a thing of beauty. It's like, gets me through the weeks. Thanks, everybody.
All right, let's move on to, we have a fictional fun fact, a question from the Discord.
Ooh, fun.
So let's go over the question from the Discord first, and because the fictional fun fact, we might ramble on that for just a second. So the question from the Discord is from Huprov, and Huprov asks, I hope this is a fun question. When approaching an established series for the first time, what is your appetite for reading ahead for spoilers, mild or major? I personally can help browsing wikis at a high level to see if my favorite characters I'm reading about in book one stay involved in later books. Wow. Definitely has risks for spoiling plot twists, but I truly can't help it and just try to avoid major spoilers. So I think what Huprov is asking is when we are reading something, what is our threshold? Like how daring are you? Yeah, like when we're looking
at I'm not daring at all. I will look 0% ahead. I will not go look up reviews of the book or recommendations or do anything, though I have had many friends and stuff who will like read the last couple pages just so they can't deal with the suspense of not knowing, you know? And so even with shows and stuff, they'll watch like the last one. I had to like leave the room before to have somebody like finish the last episode so they know what's going to happen so that we can go back and then pick up where left off, because the suspense just kills them. But I'm not that way. I don't look forward at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've just been burned too many times. Like,
yeah,
the classic one is when I was reading a Game of Thrones for the first time. I found out about a certain character who gets their head lopped off towards the end. And it was like right as I was, because I was like looking for some kind of like clarifying thing. I was just confused about something and somebody didn't use a spoiler tag. And I found out about it a few chapters before it happened.
That's so rough. That must've been like a, no, that didn't happen. No.
That was pretty lame. Yeah. That was, I I'll just forget about it. I probably won't ever, I won't remember it. I've got so many other things going on in my head. Like, nope, I remembered it and it really ruined it for me. That being said though, I mean, so I do have like a couple little quirks that I have. If I'm reading a book and I don't like it, then I will look up reviews for it.
Oh, really? You could try to kind of confirm your opinion of it? Like, is this
either that or I'll look at 5-star reviews and be like, why do people love this so much? And then sometimes it's really nice because like on Goodreads, there'll be 5-star reviews that I've read for books that I wasn't enjoying and that I've actually gone on Goodreads and read good reviews for it. And then it's kind of like pushed me through and then I've ended up finishing it and thought it was fine. But I've also really not liked something and then read the 1-star reviews and kind of like shared with like that kind of which is, you know, maybe a little toxic of me, but
you know, but, I mean, there's one thing to like go looking for it. It's another thing to be like, okay, is this like worth my time though? Is it, am I correct in my assumptions? And then finding out that like, indeed, yes, I am.
That's mostly where that energy is.
It could be a time saver, not a toxic thing.
Yeah. I mean, the reviews that I typically will look at for most books is like the 3- and 4-star reviews. Like I want to know like where the balanced critique is coming from and like what people really liked about it and what people really didn't like about it. But yeah, as far as spoilers, I mean, it just really depends on what we're reading. Like with Malazan, I'm not as worried about stuff because I don't really understand that much anyway. Like I'm not really that worried. And the community seems like pretty, especially like the Malazan subreddit is like pretty good about tagging all their spoilers and stuff. I think that now in 2024, people seem to be 85% pretty much like on the ball when it comes to covering like tagging spoilers. If I could offer any advice, I mean, like if you are reading something like, you know, you're reading like the Wheel of Time or whatever, stick to the subreddits because most of them are modded communities and they have people that systematically make sure everybody's using spoiler tags and stuff. So if you're reading the Wheel of Time, go to the Wheel of Time subreddit. You know, if you're reading Malazan, go to the Malazan subreddit. Stick around on our podcast or 10 Very Big Books and, you know, like really look out for those kinds of tags and stuff. And those communities are pretty well curated. Also, I mean,
just don't
go to the wikis. Like, don't, I know it's like, I know it's tempting because like all the information is there and it's like easy to find, but like they don't care. Like I've seen pages that say like no spoilers and I've seen like, thankfully I'd already read this stuff, but like, it's like, well, that's kind of a spoiler actually. Like, why did you guys put that there? Because it's a wiki. Like they're trying to put as much information on there as they can. So yeah, just be careful with the wikis.
Yeah, that's good, really good advice, because I've gone to a lot of the wikis and I should amend with what I said. It was like, yes, no, I never go out of my way to try to find out what's going to happen, but sometimes in researching something that I feel like I should know, like what is about that, or like some history, especially with Malazan, I've definitely been like, oh right, that's about to happen in the story. Yeah. But I haven't really like bugged me too much because it kind of almost helped my understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, Malazan's a weird one because it's almost like sometimes I kind of like welcome it. It's like, if that's a light spoiler and it helps me understand something a little, I don't really care that much. But if it's like a huge thing where someone dies, or it's like, I don't want to know about that stuff, but it's like, oh, you find out later in like the Bone Hunters that this person is related to it's like, I don't really care about that.
Right.
But it just depends. It depends on the series. It depends on the book. I won't, and I know that some people, kind of like what you were just talking about a little bit ago, Chad, I do not read the last. I know that that's like a thing that a lot of people do, is they'll read the last sentence of a book first, which is just like,
find that wild.
Why would you ever do that? Like, that just seems so weird to me, but like, to each their own. I mean, it's your eyes and your brain and your book. So,
I mean, I can't even imagine that it gives you that much information that often, right? The last like sentence, you know?
I do think though, like checking content warnings and trigger warnings and stuff, do that. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, do that for
like,
sure.
Do that. You know, I mean, even if like there is some sort of spoiler, or like you should just know, like if you like totally. if you are sensitive to certain subjects, like you should check content warnings,
right?
For
like,
sure.
Don't go into like, Kite Runner blindly.
No, definitely not. Like that's a great example. Like yeah, just yeah. don't. Yeah, I mean that kind of stuff where it's like, yeah, technically it is a spoiler, but it's like that's like the kind of spoiler that I would encourage people to
caveat.
Seek out, you know what I mean? Because like I've definitely like I've got a pretty strong stomach for stuff, but I've definitely like looked into books before, like with Manacled, like I looked it up and I found out what it was about and I was like, I just don't really want to read that right now, you know, like before totally. I get emotionally invested in this, like I just like don't really want to read about that like now, like I do later right. maybe, but I'm not in the mood for it now, and that really helps a lot. And yeah, technically I had some of the plot spoiled, but it's like yeah. it's not really spoiled, like it would have spoiled it for me if I didn't know what it was. And I
right in that
like,
way it's like,
hey,
yeah.
hey there oh
there's a
gosh.
Fine line between aiding and spoiling, and you know yeah, you know totally. you the reader only knows who where it is, you know. That's
excellent
a great
question. Yeah, thank you very much, everybody. We have a channel in the Discord called Ask BRK. It's in the activities category. If you would like to ask us a question, we are more than happy to answer it, as long as we have an answer for it.
No, we will always have an answer for it. And if we don't, yeah, we will make talking. One up. Shall we fact so of fun?
Yes, let's fact of fun. Fun, fictional, fun fact. Okay, so this one, you know, I told everybody what I was reading this week. I forgot to mention that I'm also reading Jim Henson's biography, which is, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I do this thing with nonfiction books where I don't read them cover to cover. Like I just kind of, I read some of them cover to cover, but with this one, I kind of like skipped through the Sesame Street stuff and kind of went straight into his like Muppet movie, into the Dark Crystal Labyrinth. Like I kind of like skipped.
Oh, nice.
I read like the first like couple chapters of the biography, and then I skipped like a pretty big chunk, and then moved on to the stuff I was interested in. So yeah, it's like I didn't want to mention that it was like something I was reading, because it's like probably not gonna even like finish it, but I am reading it. It is very cool. I mean, like, man, that guy was one in a million, man. Jim Henson. Like, but anyway,
indeed.
The fictional fun fact I kind of pulled out of this book, which is that Jim Henson's 1982 cult classic, The Dark Crystal, was inspired by a Leonard Lubin illustration of a crocodile wearing a shower cap and taking a bath, which was featured in the Lewis Carroll short story collection called The Pigtail. Henson said, quote, "It was the juxtaposition of this reptilian thing in this fine atmosphere that intrigued me." And that is where we
what?
Got The Dark Crystal from. So yeah, if anybody's wow. curious about what that picture is, yeah, Chad's looking it up right now. It's just type in Leonard Lubin. So it's L-U-B-I-N, Lubin, crocodile picture, and it'll come right up. I mean, apart from it being an incredibly well illustrated picture, like the shading on the scales and everything, like just the way that picture looks is really cool to look at. You could look at it for a while. I can totally 100% see like where Jim Henson was like, I love this. I love this yeah. kind of like creepy monster in like a very formal getup kind of thing. But it's like, it's also like the art style is very reminiscent of Brian Froud. You know, I mean, it really does have that kind of like otherworldly effect, you know, that Brian Froud has. And I know that Brian Froud, if you don't know, is the illustrator, the main visual aspect, I guess you could say, of The Dark Crystal, and I think also Labyrinth. He got a lot of his ideas from lobsters, I guess, like
oh wow
and like other weird stuff that he was probably into, mushrooms, I don't know. Like
this is a detailed photo, like it's not a funny little like kitty. I mean, it is, but it's a very serious piece of art.
Yeah, exactly. But I just thought that was really interesting that, according to what I was reading, at least Henson had kind of already been kicking around like this idea of doing a more like fantasy. You know, he I guess like wasn't super. He didn't want to just do Muppets. You know,
right, right.
He wasn't sick of it or anything, but he didn't want that to be like his whole thing. You know, he wanted to do other stuff, and he wanted to get like experimental, you know, and they were messing
right.
around with a lot of animatronics, like
oh.
trying to get the actual mechanisms to be as small as possible so that you could
totally.
Do like subtle facial things, like, you know, like eyes narrowing and stuff like that.
Right, a smirk.
What's interesting though, and like, you know, I am reading this autobiography, this not an autobiography, this biography, so just bear with me because I am kind of nerding out about this a little bit, but I guess what happened was that Jim Henson went to the benefactor basically who had paid for the initial Muppet movie, and it was like, hey, I want to make like something trippy and crazy, you know,
I got some crazy ideas.
Like, yeah. And then the guy was like, why don't you make another Muppet movie and we'll see how it goes, you know? And so, you know, Jim Henson was just like, damn it. All right, sure. Let's make another Muppet movie. And they made another one and it did just fine. So they started making The Dark Crystal. And I guess around that time, right around like 1979, 1980, right around when Empire Strikes Back came out, George Lucas and company were working kind of like really close to the studio that Jim Henson was working at. And so Jim Henson had all these like animatronics and like all this puppeteering stuff, you know. George Lucas was working on all of his like all their set design stuff and all like their
animatronics and puppeteering
and
stuff.
So, but I guess George Lucas was like, hey, we need help with Yoda. Like, we need help with a puppet for Yoda. We don't know what we're doing. Like, we don't do puppets. You guys do puppets.
Right. So, help us do puppets.
And so Jim Henson, there was kind of like an exchange of ability there. You know what I mean?
Ooh,
like,
cool.
It's like the George Lucas team came and kind of like helped out with some of the stuff that Jim Henson's crew was like kind of having trouble with. All of that, just like, it's just so cool to think about, man. Like, like these two minds, like, I mean, George Lucas and Jim Henson are just like, they're responsible for like such a huge chunk of everybody's childhood. And they had known about each other and then they met up and just clicked and like started working on stuff together and helping each other out artistically, which is just like, it's so inspiring.
It surprises me not at all that they got
along. I know,
along.
Right?
Like,
yeah,
of course.
And to be a fly on the wall, man, to hear them have a conversation.
Can you imagine hearing like Lucas try to explain what sort of feeling he wanted the Yoda like puppet to give you? Like,
apparently,
oh,
Frank Oz, Lucas wanted Jim Henson to do the voice of Yoda. Because Jim Henson was the most talented like puppeteer, apparently, or voice actor. I can't remember. I was reading this at like 2 a.m. But apparently Henson was busy because obviously he's just like, he's Jim Henson. He was working on a ton of different stuff. And he was like, I'm too busy. I can't do it. But Frank Oz can do the voice. And so that's who ultimately ended up doing the voice for Yoda. And apparently Frank Oz was like, when they interviewed him about it later, and after the fact, he was like, yeah, you know, it's slipping into characters is kind of rough sometimes, like, especially with puppets. Like, I gotta like try to get a feel for what exactly I want to do. But it's like, as soon as he saw Yoda, he was like, nope, that's perfect. That's exactly. Yep. It's just interesting how that kind of stuff falls together. It's like, would Yoda have even been the Yoda that we all know and love without Jim Henson having just happened to have been working in the same area?
Right. Right.
Not being able, not only that, but being too busy and having to have Frank Oz do it instead. Because like,
can
now,
you even imagine a different
so
voice
crazy.
Him having?
Dude, it's so interesting. Like, those kinds of things happen all the time, man. Like, those kinds of serendipitous
whole careers get started kind of serendipitously sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, like, I don't know if it's a rumor or not, but I think, oh gosh, Harrison Ford's getting of Han Solo was like,
he's a carpenter.
Yeah, carpenter or something. I heard he was a janitor
sets,
or somebody,
sure.
But I heard that, yeah, he
could
worked on the set or something. And then he was like a fill-in, like, reader, and then he was like, actually, that guy's killing it. And then he became Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford.
Or Solo. And no, then Harrison Ford.
Han Solo played Harrison Ford in Star Wars.
Dude, I heard that he got his helicopter pilot's license.
Oh, really?
And would fly around whenever there was like a missing persons in, because he lives apparently by like the Colorado Rocky Mountain range there. And apparently whenever there's like a missing persons report that goes up, like a 411, Harrison Ford will take off in his chopper and he helps the search and rescue teams. Like, can you imagine being like 2 days out and like not seeing anybody and like you're lost, like low on food, low on water, and all of a sudden like a chopper comes down and freaking Indiana Jones, Han Solo steps out, like, dun, 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 dun. He's like, hey, you there? Need a lift? You're like, oh my God. Like, you would definitely think that you fully lost it. Like, and I'm gone. I'm dead. I'm hallucinating now.
Did you know another fun fictional fact? Did you know that Scott Lynch, author of the Lives of Locke Lamora, the Gentleman Bastard series, was a volunteer firefighter for a little while?
No, I did not.
Like 10 years or something. Yeah. I think he's like late 40s, early 50s right now. But yeah, when he was younger, he was a volunteer firefighter.
Wow. Just I have a lot of respect for firefighters, man. That is
absolutely
scary.
Of course.
There's really like, not even especially, any type of firefighting is super badass. I was going to say forest, but like, man.
Anything.
You're fighting fire.
I remember one of my friends was on the catering crew for, so for people that don't know, Oregon and Northern California are just on fire all the time. Like,
all the time.
So it's just constant fires everywhere. And we have like our fire departments are kind of like, they're not split up, but like we have like our forest firefighters and like our kind of like more,
we have town, we have out of town. Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of states do that, but we just have like a very large force of firefighters that just go fight forest fires. And one of my friends was working the catering for that. So it's like they went into those areas and made sure all these firefighters who have to work like all day putting these fires out, they were making sure they were fed. And even that, I was like, damn, dude, like that's so scary. Like I wouldn't go anywhere near that stuff. Like, no way. Yeah. We were actually, funny story, like one of the last like tours that we went on in the United States, when I was still playing in bands, we were in Northern California. There was a forest fire, you know, raging. And we were driving down to Redding, which is in right in the middle of Northern California. And I'm surprised it's even still there
because
of all the fires there. But like we were driving, and just to give you like an idea of like how intense these fires are, it was, you know, it wasn't like super blue skies. It was like kind of hazy, but like all of a sudden, like literally within like 5 minutes, we couldn't see anything.
Wow.
And like it wasn't enough time. Like the fires just spread so fast. It wasn't even enough time for them to like close the roads. Like the fire just does its thing. Thankfully we got out of there, but like it was so scary. It was like one of the most scared I've ever been in my life.
Terrifying, dude. I've definitely been on a road before where I look over and there's like a wall of flame like rapidly approaching the highway. And I'm like, shouldn't this road be closed? Like surely they would have closed it if I was in any danger. Right. Like, right.
Just flying.
Sometimes you just can't get ahead of it.
I've seen those planes like dropping all that water and like
my next door neighbor,
I've seen them flying to drop the water.
Lots of times it's not water, it's like a powdery substance that they drop. It's like a chemical powder that they drop. My next door neighbor, he is the agent that controls where those drops happen. So when like a fire happens, he's like working real hard and like controlling where the planes are coming from, where they're picking up their payload, where they're dropping off. And so he's like has this really big, like, I don't know, to me it sounds nightmarish of organizational responsibilities. But I asked him if he's ever dropped on firemen, if he's ever like misjudged and dropped the payload onto firemen. And he was like, well, you know, he's like, you would probably hear about it because that thing's a couple tons weight. Like he's like, it would probably kill him even though it's powder like coming down on top of him because it just thumps, you know, it's just like big thick powder layer that comes down on him. He's like, yeah, it'd probably kill him. You'd probably hear about it on the news if I didn't do that. So, you know, I really try not to do that. And I was like, that's probably good.
Well, kudos to Harrison Ford and also Scott Lynch for being the heroes that, what is it? Not the hero we need, the hero we deserve. Right,
the hero we deserve.
Yeah, the other way around. Anyway, I'm delirious. It's time to go.
Let's get out of here. Yeah, let's go read some stuff.
Reading. I want to go read. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Monday morning episode. We love doing these. We love having you here for these episodes.
Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the book mail.
Thank you for everything. We have a Discord. We have a Patreon. We have our respective social media platforms where you can see all kinds of kooky content from both of us. But until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Hope you have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.